On this edition, Dream Expert Robert Moss is my special guest. We'll be talking about his newest book, Sidewalk Oracles. I'm Richard Brendan, and the conversation begins now. Welcome to the program. You know, everything is speaking to you. Everything is conspiring to show you what heaven on earth wants to happen. When you think your way is lost, when there are mountains of glass and concrete between you and your dreams, all you need are new ears and fresh eyes. This is what best-selling author and world-renowned dream expert Robert Moss shares in this new book, Sidewalk Oracles. Robert has spent his career investigating the power and purpose of the unconscious and dreams. Now he turns his focus to bringing the magic of the dream world into everyday waking life. Real magic is the art of bringing gifts from another world into this world, Robert writes. In Sidewalk Oracles, Robert teaches us to practice that real magic by becoming chiromancers who walk the roads of everyday life as conscious dreamers. Chiromancers learn to recognize how the world is speaking to them in signs and symbols, and how a deeper order of events may reveal itself through the play of synchronicity. I believe this is the third or fourth time Robert's been on this program. It's always a treat, and he joins us from his home in Upper State, New York. Robert Moss, welcome back to the program.
What a pleasure, Richard.
It's always a joy to have you on. You are so knowledgeable in the area of what I call dream time, and I've learned so much from you and all the books that you've written. And I'd like to start off our time together. First of all, I love this title, Sidewalk Oracles, Playing with Signs, Symbols, and Synchronicities in Everyday Life. In all the books I've read, this, to me personally, is perhaps one of the most practical I've read from you. And it was perfect timing for me to receive this book.
Well, that's wonderful to know. You know, Richard, my game has been to help people to get extraordinary sources of guidance in ordinary ways, in everyday ways that almost anyone can do. And the title and spirit of this book were actually inspired by my experience of living in a little gritty Rust Belt Northeast city when I'm not traveling and walking my little dog to the park every day and beginning to notice that every day the world was giving me messages in this not particularly a romantic environment. It might be a child's drawing, chalk drawing on the street. It might be the vanity plate on that car. It might be a snatch of conversation. I suddenly thought, you know, we don't necessarily have to go to an exotic place to receive an oracle, to receive a message from the deeper world. It's with us. It's around us all the time. The land itself is speaking to us. The urban street is speaking to us. Let's just pay attention. So this is a book of games and stories to add a little zest and verve and possibility of guidance from the deeper reality that anyone can play with any day, just about anywhere.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I've started playing a couple of those games in the second half of the book. I'd like to start off first, though, because in the very beginning of the book, Robert, you say we are embarking on a path of real magic. Can you explain that for us?
Well, real magic for me, Richard, is the art of bringing something from one world, gifts from one world, into another world. And we do that when we go dreaming. And as you know, I do a lot of dreaming, and I help people to learn what is possible in dreams. In dreams, in a sense, we get out there. We go beyond the ordinary conditions of ordinary life. We get beyond the body and the brain, maybe. We travel to other realms. We see things in a different way. So harvesting guidance, messages, energies from those excursions in our dreams is one example of real magic, learning that we can bring back specific information and apply it to life and bring back specific healing imagery we can apply to our bodies. That is an example of real magic in the sense of bringing gifts from one world, the dream world, into the ordinary world. It's the same with synchronicity. In the experience of synchronicity, often we feel as if something is speaking to us or interacting with us that comes from outside the ordinary realm. It comes from beyond the fields we know. We feel a hidden hand. We feel that powers moving behind the screen of our ordinary understanding are beginning to play with us and poke through the veils of our understanding and bring us awake. So to wake up to synchronicity might also be an example of bringing gifts from another world, in the sense that through the patterns of meaningful coincidence that we can learn to observe through the pop-up symbols in the world around us, we may be receiving gifts and guidance and even specific messages and signs for life from a world beyond the ordinary one. So that, again, becomes an example of operating by real magic.
You drew me into this book in the very beginning by sharing a story that I thought was so profound, especially when I read the last paragraph that you wrote at the end of this story about meeting a man at a bar in an airport. It almost sounds like a joke. But you met this disturbed young man. Can you share a little bit about the encounter you had with him and then why you believe it wasn't just a chance encounter?
It was a chivalrous exchange, and thank you for asking about it. And the sign of the fox was all over it, as you know from the book, Richard. The fox for me is an emblematic figure. The fox for me is the figure of the trickster, that sort of somewhat mischievous liminal character, energy in life that operates on the borders of things, makes things a bit edgy. So I'm at Dulles Airport in Washington changing planes, and I'm looking for a place to sit down and have a sandwich and a beer. I'm an Australian. I'll have a beer when I can. And there's nowhere open on that concourse that looks any good at all except a place called the Firkin and Fox, an Englishy pub type name with the image of the fox on the sign. There's nowhere to sit, so I'm about to move on, and a lady gets up from a bar stool and offers it to me, and she says, "You'll find the young man up there very interesting." And the young man is strange. He's going back and forth between the two stools, and I'll make it one in his own. Finally, he lets me sit down, and he behaves in a somewhat sort of passive-aggressive way to begin with, very strange indeed. And then I say something to him that has him in tears. It's something about the magic available in everyday life, and then he looks at me out of his light, tragic blue eyes, and he says, "I asked for an elder. I said it out loud. I need an elder. I need someone to counsel me in my life. And you walk into this bar, and you're already making everything different." And I'm moved by this. I mean, I'm happy to be regarded as an elder by this lost young man. He seems on the edge of self-destruction. He seems that traumatized. And I gather a lot, some from the information he gives me and some from intuition, that his family have rejected him, probably because he's gay. That's my intuition. He comes from a conservative Virginia military family. He's looking for guidance in life, and I tell him a few things that work for me, including things about paying attention to coincidence, about how magic happens, and about how when all doors seem closed, if you're open to it, you might, through synchronicity, find one that is about to open. And, you know, my bundle of common and not so common sense moves him deeper and deeper, and he wants to buy me lunch. I won't let him buy me lunch. He wants to give me a hug. I let him give me a hug. I've given him some guidance on what to do when he gets to his new town, San Francisco, and I leave. And I'm just sort of almost choked up by this feeling. I was sent to that airport bar for this kid. It actually wasn't about me. It was about someone who'd asked for a counselor, an elder, a mentor in life, had no one to turn to, and found me, and I did my best, and I felt that it made a difference. So that's one of those chance encounters that you feel are something more than chance. It's also one of those encounters where someone asks for something and then gets it. Mm-hmm. It's odd to find yourself. You probably have this experience, Richard, because you're a deep, heart-centered man, and I'm sure that you are called upon to give counsel and care to many people. But there are moments, extraordinary moments in life, when we feel that we are almost cast in the role of everyday angels, and also moments when we feel that we benefit from someone else playing that role for us. I've had that experience on my own side when I've wanted help or direction, and someone has turned up in an unlikely way who's played that role. May I give you a quick example?
Please do.
From my perspective?
Yes.
So many years ago, I was troubled. I was in trouble myself. I was not in as much deep trouble as that young man under the sign of the Firkin and Fox at the airport pub. But I was getting off. I got on the tube, the subway from Heathrow Airport to central London, and my mind is churning with the problems that I think I have, and they're to do with practicalities, money, etc. And I get into the subway car on the London tube system, and a roly-poly fellow in a check suit, in a country suit, who looks a bit like Santa Claus in a suit, looks at me and says in his British accent, he says, "The Buddha says, walk on the bridge, don't build on it." And I look at this astonishing figure. I mean, Santa Claus in an English country suit quoting the Buddha. And, you know, the Brits don't talk to each other on the subway or on the trains. I mean, this whole situation is sort of impossibly odd. And I sit down opposite him and I say, thank you. You just told me exactly what I need to know. Walk on the bridge. Don't build on it. Don't put so much importance into the circumstances of here and now, because you are in transit. I am in transit. We're all in transit. From one world, from one reality to another world, keep moving, keep walking. Don't settle down and worry too much about those little things. We proceeded to have an extraordinary conversation, which became charming but ordinary. But for a moment, I felt this man had been seized by the role he was going to play of Santa Claus or everyday angel or Buddhist counselor or something. So
yeah.
That's an example, with me being the beneficiary this time, of how sometimes in chance encounters in life, we find we are in the presence of someone playing a larger role, an archetypal role, whether they know exactly what it is and whether we asked for them to do it or not. I needed it that day. I hadn't asked for a mentor, an elder, but I got one. So I've had it both ways round.
Yeah, it's beautiful. One of the things I loved in here, Robert, is you invented a new word for the practice of navigating by synchronicity. Share that word with us and what it means.
Well, thank you, Richard. I love to play with words as you do.
Yeah.
And hey, this story begins with me trying to find a synonym for the word synchronicity itself. And Mr. Jung invented the word synchronicity. He was a classical scholar as well as a scientist and psychologist, and he knew enough Greek to put it together. But synchronicity has actually never been quite satisfactory to me. It means, when you boil it down, it just means things happening at the same time. And as Jung himself recognized, that's not the only thing going on when we experience synchronicity. Sometimes you get a run of meaningful coincidence going on for hours, days, weeks, or even longer. So anyway, I bashed my head against the wall trying to find a better word for synchronicity. I found some old ones, but I couldn't find a new one that I really loved. And then I thought, well, wait a minute, Robert. We have this word, it's serviceable, it sounds respectable. When people say synchronicity, they don't look at you as if you're barking. What you really need is a word to define the practice of navigating by synchronicity, the practice of noticing those special moments of meaningful coincidence when the universe seems to get personal and taking advantage of those moments. What would that word be? And although not as deep a classicist as Jung, I know enough of the classics to remember the Greeks had an interesting god called Kairos, K-A-I-R-O-S. He's the opposite or the antithesis of Kronos, the old god of linear tick-tock time. Kairos is the god of special moments. He's depicted in ancient art and mythology as a beautiful young man who is hairless and slippery except for a single forelock falling over his brows. We get the phrase "catch time by the forelock" from this. When he turns up in the mythic understanding, you've got to grab him right away by that lock of hair, or he's gone. So he represents those special moments when opportunity is available, the moments you must not miss, when the tide is at the flood, and you better get with it and not miss the moment. So I thought, what an interesting figure. Well, maybe in the science and art of living by synchronicity, recognizing the special moment, which brings you with a sense of shivers sometimes, a sense that the world is operating differently, being ready and poised to seize that moment, maybe that's the heart of it. So I made up the word chiromancy, which literally means divination with the aid of kairos, or the aid of the special moment, divination by special moments. And from that flows the romantic and mysterious word, chiromancer. Who is a chiromancer? A chiromancer is you or me if we are poised and ready to recognize those special moments of synchronicity, which may not be all that rare, but which need to be recognized and often acted upon immediately, acted upon by saying thank you for a moment of epiphany, a moment of revelation when we feel we are not alone in the world, but other forces are operating, with the readiness to do something perhaps to apply some guidance or sense of pattern and meaning in life that is coming through. So this whole book is an invitation to become a chiromancer, a word that people will need to have explained to them initially, but which I find is attractive as a sort of magnetic word for people. Yes, I'd like to consider becoming a chiromancer, wouldn't you?
I think so. It's so sexy, and I see myself with a glass of wine when I'm saying it.
What a good idea. Great, I'll join you in that, Richard.
When you talk about synchronicity later on, on, you say, so synchronicity is a child at play, moving pieces on a board. On our side of reality, we see the pieces move, but not the hand that moves them. Because earlier you said, play in the spirit of the child who plays without concern for consequences, because the play is the thing. That's really a big part of this, isn't it?
It's all about the play. I mean, this whole book is an invitation to regard the world as a playground rather than a prison, and to revive in oneself, in yourself, in myself, the inner child with his or her spirit of play and joy and energy and imagination. I borrowed the image of the child at play beyond this world, whose movement with the game pieces affects the events we experience in life. I borrowed that from the enigmatic ancient Greek philosopher Heraclitus, whose work survives only in fragments. But hey, as with dreams, a fragment can be quite interesting. And I like that idea. He said the deepest logic of life, the deepest order of reality, is a child, a royal child, a child of the quality of a god or king, playing with game pieces beyond this world. And you hear that and you feel the fall of those pieces, those dice, those dominoes, whatever exactly they are.
Yeah.
Scholars cannot agree. And the game pieces fall somewhere else, and in our world they manifest as events connected by resemblance, events that we call coincidence or synchronicity. So the mythic models are great. The mythic models, if you have any kind of a mythic imagination, bring it all alive. But when I say that, from the edge of, you know, a scientific understanding, too, of what it is to live in multidimensional reality, that the patterns we observe in the ordinary world may actually reflect or speak of an order of events in the multidimensional world that goes beyond what we ordinarily understand but is not inaccessible to us. And that's the whole point in my work in this kind of book. It's saying you're getting into deep stuff, you're getting into parallel universes, you're getting into scientific theories of many interactive worlds and all of that, but you're doing it in a way that gives you an everyday joy, enjoyment of playing games that will put you in touch with those things.
So in becoming a chiromancer, I have some soft R&B in the background. I've lit a candle. I've poured my glass of red wine. and not
You're
only
that. You're a perfect host, Richard. Absolutely ideal.
Not only that, but you helped me by providing 12 rules of the chiromancer. Yeah. And I just wanted to talk about a few of those because I found some of them so practical, and some of our listeners might be a little familiar with them, but probably not to the depth in which you explain it. And really, the first rule is, whatever you think or feel, the universe says yes.
Yes, it's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, this is, if you like, the infamous law of attraction, but it's put slightly differently here. The root understanding is that our thoughts and feelings are already action, and the context for grasping all of this is the knowledge that mind and matter interweave, intersect, are entangled at every level of our world. That's what physics tells us. That's not some weird fringe New Age belief. I mean, mind and matter intersect. So, you know, our thoughts and feelings, our attitudes are going to shape the events and encounters that we experience. Our attitude goes ahead of us around the corners of our lives, preparing the events we will encounter when we turn the corner. So in a very simple way, and we know this from our lives, you carry doom and gloom with you. The universe is going to give you a thousand reasons to support that attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So to do better, we want to check our attitude and not buy into some sort of very superficial, soap bubbly, we can't afford the energy of a negative thought kind of thing, but just do the best we can to shape the opinion, the attitude we're traveling with, so that it is open to new experience, open to breakthrough, open to discovery. Because, as you quoted me, whatever we think and feel, the universe is going to say yes.
Absolutely. And I find myself much more intelligent when I quote Robert Moss. So I like to do that often, Robert. And you do remind us that chiromancers know that whatever our circumstances, and I just want to pause with that because I know our listeners, many of them are coming from different situations. Some of them are probably in really tough situations, but it's really true. Whatever our circumstances, we always have the power to choose our attitude, and that this can and will change everything. The other chapter that I really found fascinating, because I didn't know some of the stories, was actually the second one, and that's Chance Favors the Prepared Mind, where you talk about some of the accidents that happened, such as the Kellogg brothers or Charles Goodyear, and on and on and on. Can you share just a few of those stories?
Well, the Goodyear story is one that sticks in my mind. I mean, basically, they had what looked like a rotten accident in the kitchen and ended up with a stinking mess on the stovetop, which they recognized as the kind of rubber you could use to make automobile tires. Other people just think things blew up, you've got a stink in the kitchen, quick, clean it away. But because they were engaged in a certain line of endeavor with a certain amount of experience and science on their side, they recognized that what other people would throw out the window would be, you know, something that they could work with. And this is a story that applies in so many aspects of life, and it interweaves with the idea that, you know, accidents are more than accidents. Accidents are opportunities for the mind that is prepared by experience and study and maybe a raw sense of opportunism to seize upon that moment. Another one that sticks in my mind, I don't think I put it in the present book, but I've certainly quoted in the past, is the invention of Tabasco. I mean, the hot sauce that I demand if I'm having eggs any morning. Tabasco was invented by a southern planter who went off to fight for the rebels in the American Civil War and came back and found his plantation was gone. All that was left was a few weeds, as they were considered, growing, you know, by the ashes, the embers, the frame of the destroyed plantation house. And he thinks, well, what can I do with these weeds? And he does a few experiments because he knows a little bit about working with plants and so on, and he produces a hot sauce, which went on, McElhaney's hot sauce, Tabasco, which went on to be a perennial favorite. So I love these experiences in life of how chance or accident favors a prepared mind, in the sense that if you are poised and ready, you can do something with, you know, something that other people just regard as a mess. I give a funny, sort of trivial-seeming example in my own book of how finishing this book on a drab winter day in upstate New York with that gray urban snow that nobody likes, feeling a bit sorry for myself, walking the dog, I see an empty cider carton, and the branding people for the company have been naughty and funny. They've put a name on this sampler box for different ciders. Cluster Chucks is what they put on the box. Yeah. Other people would think, oh, God, kids are trashing the neighborhood. Why can't they clean up their cartons? I'm looking at this phrase, Cluster Chucks, on this empty cider sampler carton. I start barking out loud because I'd been looking for a phrase to describe patterns of coincidence, patterns of little incidents that you know resemble each other but are spread over space and time and come in clusters. And I thought, Cluster Chucks, that could be a word I could use. Naughty, frivolous, laughing. And so, I mean, it's not as good as inventing the automobile tire or McElhaney's Tabasco sauce, but it gave me a fun phrase for the day because I was looking for something and I was ready.
Well, that is a huge point. You said earlier, favor the prepared mind. The mind does need to be prepared for that, because anyone unprepared would have dismissed the accidents that you talk about in this book. But chiromancers attract the right kind of accidents. So they're really not accidents.
No, I mean, we had one of the things we want to observe is, you know, magnetism. A.E. George Russell, the Irish poet, mystic painter, talked about spiritual gravitation. Emerson talked a lot about magnetism. I'm not sure that he used the phrase spiritual magnetism, but he was talking about the psychic, emotional, spiritual magnetism exerted by our chosen preferences and interests and how they bring things together. These are interesting and poetic versions of the law of attraction. We are all magnetic individuals. We're all strange attractors. We often don't pause to notice close enough what we are attracting or alternately repelling. And in a creative life, you know, what holds our interest, what focuses and features our passions, what is the theme of our studies and our best work is going to call things towards us, including other people, maybe even including intelligences beyond the physical. Some of us have had that sense that sometimes when we're going really deep in a certain line of work and study, that we draw the sympathetic support of creative presences and spirits beyond the physical plane. We certainly draw individuals and events and encounters in ordinary reality according to how strongly we are following our passions and the nature of what our studies, passions, and interest is. I mean, this is part of the magnetism of life. It's going on whether we're aware of it or not. As we become more aware of it, we probably notice that it has more positive features because we're open for them and we're capitalizing on them.
Yeah. I'm Richard Brendon, and today we're playing with signs, symbols, and synchronicity in everyday life with the great Robert Moss, dream expert and creator of active dreaming. We'll have much more of this conversation, but first, here's a short break. Welcome back to the program. It's a joy to have Robert Moss back with us on today's program. I always find Robert fascinating, and I have so enjoyed all the books. And by the way, if you want to visit Robert online, go to mossdreams.com. We're talking about this newest book, Sidewalk Oracles. And there's another section in this chapter on becoming a chiromancer. And by the way, there's an oath to become a chiromancer that people can take, if you will. It's really an acronym, but let's go through that briefly because it is a nice reminder of how to be prepared for those synchronicities. And the first one is, open to a new experience.
Well, I came up with this acronym. It's not really a solemn promise, but it could be, but there's nothing too solemn about it. I came up with this because I wanted an easy response to people who say, well, why aren't I attracting more synchronicity, or how can I? I mean, how do I get on board with this? So I said, really, if you want to be a chiromancer, you want to take the oath of the chiromancer in this sense. The O is being open to new experience, being open to new discovery, being open to get outside your groove and your comfort zone or your rut, and maybe being open to getting outside plan. The A is of becoming aware and giving your attention to what is going on when things start to happen in a different way. When you get into that special moment, when you know through your shivers, through your feelings, that time and space are operating slightly differently. Things are coming together in a different way. The universe is getting personal. You might feel that you're getting a secret wink or a secret handshake from the universe, although alternatively something unseen is pushing you back. Pay attention. Be aware. The T is for saying thank you. I mean, when you have these moments when you feel that the world is working differently and that unseen powers are at play and at work in your life, I mean, sometimes you simply want to say thank you because you recognize you're not alone. You're not alone in this world. You're not alone between the worlds. There are greater powers, other powers. They're in play. So say thank you. Say thank you for the joy, the wonder, the novelty, the thrill of the experience. And then the H in the oath is for honoring, which means, in practice, taking some action. Take some action. You've had a moment of everyday epiphany, a moment of everyday revelation, a moment when you felt yourself standing between the worlds with the doors open to you. Okay, what are you going to do? What do you harvest from this? How do you act upon this guidance? Maybe it sends you on a line of study. Maybe it sends you, you know, off to the bank or off to the divorce lawyer or off to the train or off to the friend to share the experience or off to the market to buy some bananas. But you take some action. So that's the oath of the chiromancer. Be open, pay attention, say thank you, and honor this experience by taking some kind of interesting action.
Yeah, and you share something I think that everybody needs to be reminded of, and maybe for some it's something new, but I think it's really vital that we get this, especially in this day and time. You say that we live in a conscious universe where everything is alive, everything is connected, and everything has spirit. And so the Australian Aborigines say, we live in a speaking land. Can you share more about the power of that concept?
Yes, I love this phrase, the speaking land. As you say, I borrowed this from the Aborigines of my native Australia. I mean, their attitude is everything is alive, everything's talking. It's a question of how many voices you're willing to hear and what you do with it. The mountain is talking, the ancestors are talking, the river's talking, the lizard is talking, talking, the speaking land. I think it's like that for us, even in the hubbub of a city environment, whether or not we've got the headphones on. I think everything is alive and conscious, and this is a view that is no longer alien to physics, which tells us that mind and matter interweave, they're entangled at every level of reality. You can't draw a hard and fast boundary between mind and matter. There's a dance of consciousness at the heart of matter and at the heart of energy, and it's all going on like that. So part of the trick is to expand your field of perception, or at least allow yourself a few minutes a day when you can do that, and take in more of what the world around you might be doing. How do you do that? Well, one thing I recommend is you schedule just 10 or 15 minutes of unscheduled time any day, anywhere you like, in the park, at the beach, on the street, wherever you happen to be, and you just use all of your senses, and you listen, and you smell, and you look. And you feel the air on your skin, and you pick up the impressions of the world around you. If you want to bring it into sharp focus, you can say that during that period of time, you're going to collect three perceptions that are particularly important to you, working with any of your senses. Any of your senses might become dominant. You're going to look at them afterwards and make a story out of them. You might get a message, you might get guidance from it, but it might be about more interesting, something more interesting than getting a message on a life issue. It might be about tapping into a pattern of connection and resemblance, developing field perception, feeling what the world around you is like and is saying that day and what your connection with it is. It might be something terribly simple. Yeah. It might be the sound of the wind in the trees. It might be the feel of your sun on your skin. But you're becoming available to the world. You're walking with the speaking land, listening to the speaking land. And, you know, that can be a tremendous boost for life.
Yeah. And only the great Robert Moss can quote in the same book, Australian Aborigines, George Russell, and Yogi Berra. The great prophet and Yankee Yogi Berra said, you come to a fork in the road, take it.
Yes.
There's some truth to that, though, isn't there?
There's absolute truth to that. I mean, one of my favorite areas to study and exploration, Richard, as you may have gleaned from this book and from previous conversations we have, is the idea that we are living in what physicists now call the many interactive worlds. Many world theory has been around for a while. The tragic Hugh Everett first coined the theory back in the 1950s or 1960s back at Princeton, the idea that we live right now in one of maybe limitless parallel universes, and that what is going on in those parallel universes is relevant to us to a greater or lesser extent. Well, now what physicists are saying is, okay, this is not only so, but the many worlds are many interactive worlds. In other words, what's going on in the parallel life where you and I are not talking on your wonderful show is relevant to us right now. What Richard is doing a bit further away, having made different life choices, may still be relevant to him. What the Robert, who is not a dream teacher, is doing somewhere else might still be relevant. As we go on through life, every time we come to a fork in the road, to follow the great Yogi Berra, we take it. I mean, we follow one track as we think. It's the dominant timeline, the event track that we think we're on. But, you know, we also took the other path. We also took the path not taken in ordinary terms. And we're walking that path in the world of the many parallel universes. And how would we know about that, and what would it matter to us other than as a scientific concept? Well, you know what? It might be like this. As we go through life, we come closer or further away from our parallel selves who made different choices. And as we do that, as we converge with the parallel self who made a different choice, maybe we take on the gifts and challenges, the karma, so to speak, good or bad, of that parallel self. And so on. Once again, how do you know about that? How can you make sense of it? How can you make use of it as a human being? Well, in a couple of ways. First of all, if you're a dreamer and you keep a dream journal over time, you will probably notice that in your dream life, you seem to be returning to situations a bit different from your present life, but in which you seem to be living a continuous life. Mr. Jung achieved that understanding towards the end of his life. He postulated that in dreams we have glimpses of continuous lives. We are living somewhere else. I think he was absolutely right. And in the plane of synchronicity, for example, when you have that sense of deja vu, you come into a scene you absolutely know because you've been there before. It might be because you dreamed it ahead of time. It might also be because on one of those parallel time tracks that you're not following right now, you did come to this place before you got to it on your present life path. And maybe when you awaken to that, there is very interesting knowledge and connections to be made. So, you know, that's why I quote Yogi Berra on that. And on that, Yogi Berra is a great philosopher and practical counselor. If you come to a fork on the road, actually, you're going to take it, whether you know it or not.
Well, and one of the keys is to pay attention when the same theme or symbol or image comes up again and again, just as you might pay attention to recurring dreams.
Yes. This actually becomes one of the games that I suggest people play in the Book of Games section of Sidewalk Oracles. I call it Ask the Spiral Question Mark. And I mean, this might be of some interest. It's certainly been of help to me to think about this repeatedly. You know, as we go through life, we come to situations we know before, not just in the sense of deja vu, but in the sense that we feel we are being presented with opportunities, challenges, temptations that people, individuals, who resemble the ones we knew before. You go around in a great loop, and here you are. You're confronted with this person. She or he reminds you so much of that other person. This situation and the choices to be made remind you so much of the previous situation. This is a moment of incredible opportunity to bring awareness or consciousness to bear in life. When we notice that we're making that loop, we have the choice of either to repeat ourselves by falling into the same patterns we found ourselves in before, or harvesting knowledge from what happened before to handle the situation differently. We might make similar choices, but even if we do, if we bring awareness of the possible consequences of those choices in a focused way, we can do better. So this is the moment when you have the opportunity to walk the spiral path in life, as opposed to going around and round on the wheel of repetition. Your life seems to have come to a familiar junction, a familiar intersection, a familiar set of choices. When you bring the knowledge that you've been there before, at least in a symbolic way, a situational way, and you bring that awareness to bear, you can choose to take the spiral path of not only going round and round, but going up at the same time and hopefully accomplishing something better.
Yeah. You're listening to Richard Brendon bringing love to life here on WICR. My guest today is author and dream expert Robert Moss. We're talking about his newest book, Sidewalk Oracles, Playing with Signs, Symbols, and Synchronicity in Everyday Life. We'll have much more of this conversation, but first, here's another short break. Welcome back to the program. Robert Moss is my guest today. This is probably the third or fourth time you've been on the program, and I learn more and more from you every time you come on. I find your research and your writing fascinating. This book, I think our listeners will find when they pick up a copy, very practical in their everyday life. It'll help guide them, I think, in their journey in this lifetime. And you talked before the break about the games that you created. Sidewalk Oracles is full of fun everyday games, and one of the ones you talk about is Sidewalk Tarot. So what is Sidewalk Tarot and how do you play it, Tarot?
Well, the idea is that wherever you are, maybe on an urban street, hence the sidewalk bit, the world is dealing you, so to speak, tarot cards.
Mm-hmm.
A tarot deck has 78 cards. The world deck has no limit, so it may take you a while to figure out what a particular card represents. What form do these cards take? Well, they take the form of whatever comes up when you're walking in everyday life down the street or in the park or wherever you are. It might be the snatch of conversation from a stranger. It might be the logo on the side of the truck. It might be the black dog on the corner. It might be a pattern of traffic. So the world is dealing you signs like tarot cards, and what you want to do if you're going to make it your game is to give yourself a couple of daily practices. And here are two that I recommend, two alternate ways or parallel ways of playing the game of Sidewalk Tarot. The first is this. You have a theme in your mind in your life right now, something which you'd like some guidance or counsel. you get that theme as clear as possible in your mind. You can put it to your dreams as well, of course, but let's talk about sidewalk tarot. Suppose you want guidance on a particular decision or choice, guidance on your love life, guidance on your relationship, guidance on your job. Doesn't matter what it is, large or small. You say in your mind with clarity, I would like guidance on this. And then you set out on your commute or in the 15-minute period of unscheduled time you're going to give yourself to play this game. And you are ready to receive the first unexpected, unlikely thing that the world gives you in your field of perception as a direct message to you on your theme. If you like, I'll give you an example of how this works in a moment when we've laid out the other method of doing it. It's amazing how quickly you can get that guidance. It might be the first thing. If you're not satisfied with the first thing, you can prolong the experiment, of course. You can take a series of things. So that's the first way of playing sidewalk tarot. Just as you might set a question to the tarot or another divination system, if you're sitting down to do it or have someone do it with you, you set your question to the world and you accept what the world gives you. As one card, or you can do it as a three-card set or more, and you play with the idea that these are the responses you need, and you figure out how they relate and what your answer is. The other way, which is sometimes actually more interesting, is not to set a question for the world, but to let the world put a theme to you. Because, you know, the ego is not necessarily all that smart or all that wise, and its agendas are not necessarily the most important ones. So I like to do this with an open spirit and an open mind, and I'll give myself probably 30 minutes. I'll walk the dog around the lake in the park when I'm doing this, and my game now will be with an open mind, an open heart, with all my senses alive, including my sense of smell dormant in so many of us white men. I'm going to receive what the world gives me during a certain walk or a certain period of time as tarot cards, which are given to me not on my agenda, but without an ego agenda involved. I might just go for three of them. I might just write down at the end of my walk the three top perceptions, the three things that seem most interesting to me, make a story out of them, or there might be more. It might be a more complex story. I'll be open for that. But for everyday practice, a three-card spread, a three-card draw would be quite sufficient. Collect three perceptions that you receive in your given period of time from the world and see what the story looks like. I mean, this can be so very simple. I mean, today, for example, getting ready for this show, I'm just walking the dog a quick walk because I didn't have much time. The first thing I perceive is a phrase out of nowhere that I'm paying attention to. It's a woman saying in a loud voice to her companions, "Who cares?" And I think, well, most people would throw that away, like the cluster chuck cider box I mentioned earlier. Yeah. Who cares? Because we hear it so often, but I think, actually, what an incredible theme for any day, because it raises the whole nature of what do we care about? What is care? What is caring? What is not caring? The Desert Fathers considered acedia, A-C-E-D-I-A, which means not caring, the least recognized and the most serious of all the mortal sins. That not caring was one of the deepest, least recognized, and most paralyzing and debilitating mortal sins. Not caring, the sin of not caring. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not a Desert Father. I'm not going to go off into obscure theology. But I thought, wow, who cares? What a theme. And I found myself asking, what do I care about passionately right now? What do I love passionately right now? How is that generating my field of experience and circumstances? How does that work for all of us? So that's an example of finding the extraordinary in the ordinary. My game, as it is on any other day, was to collect three impressions from the world. The first one is this seemingly throwaway phrase, who cares? Mm-hmm. And yet it sparked an inner meditation, which became incredibly interesting and helpful for me in that moment.
And so this game is happening today, so it's still unfolding.
Absolutely.
Oh, wonderful. You also give us a synchronicity game called Listen for Your Daily Cleodon.
Yes.
What is a Cleodon?
Well, a Cleodon is a Greek word, and I decided not to translate it. We can have a little bit of mystery, and sometimes these phrases are fun and frisky. A Cleodon is, I just gave an example, the who cares, the little who cares story. That's an example of a Cleodon. A Cleodon is speech, sounds, or other noises coming out of silence or out of an undifferentiated pattern of white noise. Mm. So suddenly some phrase, some speech, the cry of a bird, or something like that comes out of silence or out of undifferentiated noise. That for the Greeks, who made a great study of oracles, had the famous Delphic oracle, they had the famous oak tree of Zeus at Dodona, they had so many places where they went to seek guidance in the deeper universe. Mm-hmm. For them, the kleidon was one of the favorite forms of everyday divination. An oracle is literally something that speaks to you, and for the Greeks, sounds coming to you in this way, preferably really a snatch of conversation, were, you know, one of the favorite ways of getting guidance from the deeper universe. They had a very interesting oracle, in a physical location, a place called Pharai in the Peloponnese in ancient Greece. I think of this as the marketplace oracle. Let me just sketch it to you for a moment to give you a feel for how this was practiced with a little bit of ritual. So it's the close of day, close of business, vendors are packing up their stalls and going home. And you come, if you have a question for life on which you need counsel, you come through the gate of the world market, you might bring a little oil for the lamp of the god, and you go to the statue of Hermes, the messenger of the gods, the gatekeeper figure, the one who really embodies the principle of synchronicity. You go to the statue of Hermes at the center of the market, you whisper your question, your life question, in the ear of the statue of the god, and then you do this. You clap your hands over your ears, you walk back to the gate, you exit the gate, you take your hands off your ears, and now the first thing you hear from the world around you will be your message from the god. That's seeking the kleidon with an element of ritual. Of course, I'm low on ritual because I'm offering things that you can do any day right. without any mumbo-jumbo right. or complications. So I'm simply saying a game to play any day is go outside, go out into your world, and accept the first thing in the way of sound or speech that comes at you from the world as your kleidon of the day and see if there's a message for you in it.
And Robert, one of your rules for navigating by synchronicity is notice what's showing through the slip. You yes. say this even that led to your present publisher. Can you tell us that story?
Oh, I'd love to tell that story. I don't think it will embarrass Georgia, my editor. She's heard it a few times and agreed to let me put it in the book. So the first book I published to my current publisher's New World Library was called The Three Only Things, and the title refers to dreams, coincidence, synchronicity, things we sometimes dismiss as only this or that, which are very important. I got the idea, I need a new publisher, and I'm thinking, do I go back to some of the big boys in New York City I used to work with? And I remember I've had some very pleasant email exchanges with Georgia Hughes, the editorial director of New World Library, a small, wonderful publishing house in Nevada, California. I think, well, maybe I'll give her a shot. We've never spoken except through email. We had nice email exchanges in which I was advocating someone else's book, which Georgia published. So I pick up the phone. Georgia picks up the phone, her end, which is nice. Editorial directors don't always do that. She starts talking to me as if we are intimate friends who've been telling each other about our lives for years, telling each other about vacations. It's so warm and intimate that I say to Georgia, Georgia, do you know who this is? And this is what she says. She says, yes, absolutely. You're Robert Moss. You're the author we are publishing. I say, Georgia, but we've never spoken, and I haven't talked to you about publishing any book of mine yet. Oh, she starts apologizing. Oh, I think of Richard Moss, the author we published. I say, hold on, no apologies. There are different kinds of slips. There are Freudian slips, but this is a sort of cosmic slip or an opportunistic slip. You've just told me you absolutely know who I am. I'm Robert Moss. I'm the author you are publishing. It just so happens I have a book idea I'd like to try on you. Okay, try me. So I talked to her about the idea for the book. We have a wonderful half-hour conversation. The next day she calls, having talked to Mark, the publisher, yeah. and they have a contract and proposal for me. So I'm off, you know, to publish with my current publishers for the first time. So that's what's showing through the slip. Something pretty interesting. What's showing through the slip is that, in a sense, it feels like we are meant to come together because that's what's been announced. Mm. What's showing through your slip in your way might be something different. I notice, for example, because I'm fairly good with names, that when I call somebody by the wrong name, there's something going on. I always, instead of just saying, sorry, I got your name wrong, I want to say, well, who's Michelle? Who's Charles? Who's Bud? Who's this other person? This once happened in one of my workshops, and it's a moving moment. I keep calling a guy called John, let's say, Bob. And finally, three times, and I say, okay, who's Bob? And he doubles up with pain, and he says, oh, Bob was my close friend. He died a few months ago. I'm wearing his sweater. I feel I've got his energy all around me. So I was picking up intuitively that a guy this fellow had loved was with him. So that's what the mistaken name meant that day.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a great... I apply this even to such trivial things as typos. I make typos all the time, pecking at the keyboard. But when I make a certain kind of typo, I pause and I look at it and say, are my fingers telling me something that's ahead of, you know, what I was formulating in my mind? It's a great game to play in life. When you notice you're tripping over a word or a name or someone else's, pause and say, what is showing through the slip? If Mark Twain, who was a great student of synchronicity, had done that consistently, he would have avoided losing his fortune, which is a story I'd be happy to tell if we have time.
We'll have to do that another time. Looks like we're about out of time, but I'd love to have you back again because there's so much more I would love to talk about with you, Robert, on this. But first of all, your book, Sidewalk Oracles, is available. Playing with Signs, Symbols, and Synchronicity in Everyday Life. New publisher, New World Library. They're definitely friends of this radio show. And Robert, it's always such a joy to have you on here. And again, people can visit you online by going to mossdreams.com.
What a pleasure, Richard. Thank you so much.
I'll have a final quote, but first, here's a classic song from Gary Wright.
Just close my eyes again. Climbed aboard the Dreamweaver train. Trying to take away my worries of today and leave tomorrow behind.
In closing, I'd like to share something that Robert wrote in this book, Sidewalk Oracles. It's called The Speaking Land. Everything is speaking to you. The tarot fool is out of the deck and walking up the drive with the patterns of the world in his sack to remind you, if you'll listen, that to be wise, you may need to be crazy in the eyes of others and not confuse this with behaving like a bloody fool. The chickens in the yard can teach you multiplication and what you need to hatch the dragon's egg you have inside. Hawk will come over, more interested in you than a chicken dinner. Are you ready to soar on his wings and claim his vision and see your life roads from his sky? Everything is conspiring to show you what heaven and earth want to happen. When you think your way is lost, when there are mountains of glass and concrete between you and your dreams, the ones who move beyond the curtain of our consensual hallucinations and speak as the wind in the trees, as the call of a bird, as the bark of a fox, will open ways where you least expect them. All you need are new ears and fresh eyes. It's always a thrill for me to have Robert Moss as a guest on this program. The book we talked about today is Sidewalk Oracles, Playing with Signs, Symbols, Synchronicities, and Everyday Life. For more information, go to his website, mossdreams.com. Now to take us out on today's show, here's one of my favorite musicians, Miles Davis. And Miles Davis. What a powerful combination. That is today's program. I want to thank you so much for joining me here on 88.7 FM WICR. All shows are podcast on my site. That's richardbrendan.com. And so for engineer Kylan Talley and production coordinator Angel Richardson, I'm Richard Brendan. You've been listening to Journey's Fire, bringing love to life one broadcast at a time.